Hello, everyone. Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is April 20th, 2015. We have two bills that are up for public hearing and possible work session, and then 10 other bills to work. My intention is to have the public hearings first with about 20 minutes for each. These are pretty big bills, but they will continue to go through the Capitol, and there's lots more opportunity for input. So we're hoping to keep that to 20 minutes just to keep it going and aim to get out of here at 5, hoping that you guys have your schedules set to get out at 6 if needed, but we're going to try hard to get out at 5. So I'm going to open a public hearing on 2198. Robin, can you please summarize the bill?
Certainly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2198 requires Housing and Community Services Department to report to Interim Committee on Delivery of Housing Services. There is a dash one amendment pending that replaces the bill, defines affordable housing, area median income, and development for purposes of statute, directs Housing and Community Services to develop and implement affordable family housing development program, allows department to make and administer grants for these purposes, creates affordable family housing development fund within the general fund, requires report to Legislative Assembly on or before February 1st, 2016. There is a revenue impact statement issued. There is a fiscal impact statement issued.
Okay. Margaret Van Vliet.
Hello, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. Margaret Van Vliet, Housing and Community Services Director. Glad to be here today to talk to you about the dash one amendments to House Bill 2198. This is really a vehicle to establish what you might think of as policy parameters for the proposed $100 million in new bonding capacity for housing development. These amendments really would cover the kind of policy parameters that you've been hearing me talk about and that have been discussed in this committee and elsewhere. But we intend to memorialize those discussions and really put up something on the order of sort of sideboards so that assuming there is some new housing money authorized in this session, that there is some clarity about how that will be deployed. And so quickly, the amendments cover priority populations. And for this purpose, we've talked about between 0 and 60% of area median income as the target population. And further, we are proposing that it prioritize families with children. The bill suggests that the Housing Stability Council will set policy to ensure the funds are distributed statewide while concentrating funds and resources in areas of the state with the greatest need. It suggests the Housing Council should consider factors including severe rent burden, the gap between the needed affordable units and the available affordable units in communities, and market data such as rents and vacancy rates. The Housing Council in this these amendments is also charged with balancing the greatest number of units built with the longest possible use of the units as affordable housing. In other words, we don't want to, we want to be able to, if we're using bonding, we want to be able to have these be long-term assets for the state. And we want to be able to do them efficiently, but have them be good quality assets. We want to consider ways to reach and serve underserved communities, including communities of color and rural communities. We do want to consider ways to reduce the cost of construction. That has been a point of discussion in this session and previously. We want to consider linkages with various regional collaboratives, including things like regional solutions teams, early learning hubs, coordinated care organizations, and the like, and that the funds be used to help address other state priorities like moving families to economic independence, improving health and education outcomes. The amendments clarify the ownership will be by the state in whole or in part, and allows us to conduct activities including acquisition, construction, development, improvements, rehabilitation, and again, ownership of the housing, and to have us do so by entering into contracts with experienced entities to manage and operate the housing. We've talked about that a little bit. The use of general fund bonds or Article 11 Q bonds require that the state take an ownership role, but we would want to do that in a way where we were not positioned to compete with the private sector, either the for-profits or the nonprofits. We want to partner with them. We think that there's probably more discussion to be had about this set of policy parameters. We're eager to do that. We can anticipate some Dash 2 amendments potentially that would include additional reporting language back to the legislature, including dates and language about what kinds of things the Legislative Assembly would like for us to report on. We need a name for the program, so that's a small but important thing. And we anticipate there could be other sort of refinements or cleanups, including changing the name that's currently listed as the Housing Council to the Housing Stability Council, in keeping with House Bill 2442, which you passed. So that's an outline of the policy parameters as we have sketched them out so far. I'd be happy to take questions or comments.
Okay, committee? Representative Buehler.
I have a few. Chair.
Go for it.
Thank you. This is a step forward, certainly, from what we've had before. Can you compare this proposal to our current allocation methodology that you're using?
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Buehler, I think that would draw on some of what we currently use in allocation methodology, but I think this would be an opportunity to improve on some of those pieces, particularly around how we want to think about cost containment. We currently don't have a lot in our allocation methodology that focuses on that. I think using innovative strategies to try and drive cost containment while still, you know, maintaining high quality buildings is something we could do here that would be different than what we currently do. We currently don't have, while we have some good language around need, we're not as specific, for example, around serving communities of color that have historically been disadvantaged. And so I think there's some refinements and building on what we've learned about where there continue to be gaps.
And how is this different in terms of geographic equity that we've experienced? How is it different to what you're doing now under this proposal?
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Buehler, I think it is a little bit stronger. I think this is language that's consistent with what we've been talking about with, for example, the document reporting fee. But that wasn't always as clear in the statute, and so I think this is consistent in that way with the kinds of things we've been talking about. I think if it calls on the Housing Council to be very intentional about using data and research and a needs-based allocation methodology, I think we'll have good luck being able to knit the need question together with the geographic equity question. I'm certainly open to additional language about how to sort of tie that down a little more firmly. So this is as much as we've gotten, but I think we're certainly open.
In previous communication, you've talked about scoring method.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that and the weighting of that scoring method that you use? I assume there's a score or weighting according to these criteria in some way.
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Buehler, I would picture us developing that as we go forward. It's not developed yet for this purpose. We certainly have the scoring methodology and the weighting and ranking and so forth for our federal funds, for example, and our other sources that we distribute. But we haven't developed that, and I think we have the opportunity to do that with this new source of funds in a way that really targets what the legislature's priorities are.
And how do we have assurances that not only is money being equitably distributed, but also efficiently, so it's just not stuck in accounts in the agency like we've seen. Is that part of the reporting structure?
Chair Kangeyer and Representative Buehler, absolutely. And I think one of the safeguards here is that it's my understanding that the projects have to be fairly well along in their development. They have to be pretty well-conceived projects ready to go before bonds would be sold. And so I think this idea that we have some time, the bonds would not be sold until late in the biennium. And what we've been saying in this building and with our stakeholders is that that gives us time to develop the protocols, to think deeply about allocation methodology and what kinds of competitions you might want to put together. That can very much be informed by conversations in this building. And then, again, projects have to be pretty far along in the sort of readiness to proceed before bonds would be sold. So I think there's a couple of good safeguards there.
And then how about the – tell me about the State Housing Council and their minutes to those meetings. Are those posted somewhere that's easily obtainable? How's that work?
Yes. Chair Kangeyer and Representative Buehler, absolutely. We, of course, follow all the public meetings, sort of laws and guidelines for the State Housing Council. They are a public body. Meetings are noticed in all the sort of public publications. The meetings are open. We take public comment. Minutes are posted on our website. We can certainly tinker with that and make it, you know, give it greater exposure if that's the will of the legislative body. But so it operates very clearly as a public body in that way.
And then I see it may not be precedence exactly, but certainly the scale, potential scale of the state owning, building, managing large affordable housing projects, that seems to be a new ground for the state of Oregon. Can you comment on that?
That's, yes, Chair Kangeyer and Representative Buehler, absolutely. And I think that's the reason that we want to be thoughtful about how we chart out agreements with the private sector so that we're clear about our rights and responsibilities as an owner and what can we transfer by way of contracts. The Department of Justice has given us some preliminary guidance, and you may have a letter that we received from them just a couple of weeks ago in that regard that begins to chart out what the ownership role needs to look like. So I think there's more work to be done to do that. I think if we can lean on the private sector partners who are good at this without completely abdicating our responsibilities, I feel confident there's a path forward. I would say the other piece is I'm not convinced that the scale of these will in fact be large. I think what we've come to understand is to use general fund and this Article 11Q methodology, we will be best served if we don't try and blend it with federal tax credits, just because the ownership piece would get extra complicated there. And so for me, that argues that we will probably tend to do smaller scale projects that might be a little bit more manageable in terms of risk and ongoing responsibilities and monitoring and that kind of thing.
So what's your vision of the private partner? What will be their role in these projects? Is the state of Oregon going to be managing units of affordable housing? How's that going to work?
Chair Kangeyer and Representative Buehler, we would not propose to be providing sort of property management services. We have to have an oversight role. We have to have sort of asset management functions as a responsible owner. But by contract, we would delegate day-to-day, you know, renting of units, managing of apartments, upkeep of the grounds, you know, financial responsibilities to a third party. And again, that could be a for-profit or a non-profit provider. There's many experienced housing providers across the state. And so I think we just have to be, I think there's very much, you know, models for this, to be a public agency as an owner, but delegate responsibilities. That doesn't mean we don't still have some responsibilities or risks. So the contracts have to mitigate that for the state and be thoughtful about roles and responsibilities.
Yeah, just check in with me. I want to make sure we don't go too off track. And I want to make sure if anyone else down here has any questions.
And I appreciate you coming up with a method of reporting to the legislature. Would you be willing to put some targets on some of your goals, so that we have an idea to metric what you're trying to achieve in terms of efficiency and equity and the criteria you've outlined here. So we have an idea what you're shooting for.
Yes, absolutely. Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Buehler, I think that'd be very appropriate. I would be pleased to sort of have those conversations, you know, individually in committees, in this building, as we proceed through session. And then again, I think it might be that the Housing Stability Council could propose some of those kinds of things, bring them back in the fall, and sort of do some check-ins. But I think you're right. This would be historic. It would be unprecedented. And I think we'll all be happy to be very careful and thoughtful and transparent about how we do that.
So that's something you foresee being worked on in the interim targets?
That timing sounds right to me, but we're happy to take suggestions, you know, in the short run as well.
Other questions?
I have a couple. Just okay. Keep them short. You said there was no name. I see the Affordable Family Housing Development Program Fund. I assume that's a starting name.
Madam Chair, that's a starting point, and it may end up being that, but I think we wanted to just keep it open, and that was how it appeared in the governor's recommended budget, so okay. That's where we got that.
So I would love to get a sense of what $100 million, how far that can get us in terms of what the need is, and whether you look at blending any of this $100 million with other funds you have available, or whether you're thinking this is going to be what's targeting low-income families, and some of the, and then you'll look at veterans, domestic violence, mental health, all the other kinds of needs with the other funds, or are you going to try to pull them all together?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we talk a lot about that, Madam Chair. And so I think today, what feels right to us based on what we understand about this color of money and what we've been hearing from our partners and the Housing Council is that we would, for the most part, allow the existing resources, which are largely driven by federal tax credits, to continue to do the kinds of diverse work and diverse kinds of housing that we already do. That's about 1,300 units a year of new development and some acquisition rehab. And that this could be more targeted, and that if we can keep it simple and not blend it, we can probably have better luck driving down some of the costs and complexity of implementation. The way I'm thinking about this and the way it's been talked about in my Ways and Means Subcommittee, for example, is that we want to have a relatively light touch on regulatory compliance, a relatively sort of easy to execute strategy, so that we can quickly get units on the ground. And so the way we're thinking of it now is that we keep doing what we're doing with the existing resources, and that serves a diversity of kinds of needs, and that this would be more targeted and more expeditious. Some of the same partners might use both. I'm not trying to preclude any of that, but I do think that we can think about this as a unique opportunity to really do something different than what we've been doing. So that's, but I think that can be influenced by legislative discussions and, you know, in this session and in the interim. In terms of how, you know, what impact it will have on overall need, you know, we look at a lot of different data sets, and one of the ones that I think was most compelling to me was just in terms of matching up the numbers of families who are extremely low income and how many units are available for that population. We see a gap of roughly 50,000 units statewide. I've stated publicly, and I think it's in the materials that you've got in OLIS, that we think that with 100 million, we could get between 3,000 and 4,000 units of new production. So that's, in some ways, you know, a very small percentage of the overall need. But the other thing I would say about that is we've got to make policy choices all along the way, and those policy choices will dictate how much they cost and how many units we ultimately get. So I think there's a lot more to be sort of debated and thought about and analyzed. That's the approach we're thinking of now, and I'd be happy to hear if folks have comments or concerns about that.
Okay. If there are no more questions, I think we'll probably move on. And I don't see anyone else signed up to testify in the public hearing, correct? Then I think we'll probably move on because this is a great starter for the conversation. We still have several months for people to weigh in on this, even though it's coming late in our particular committee. I think one of the things we talk a lot about is meeting the need. I think the thing that rarely comes up but is also in the back of my mind is what this can do for the construction industry as well and help spur development in that particular arena and add to our economy. So it's very exciting. Thank you for the work. I know there's a lot more work to be done on it. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2198, open a work session on 2198. Representative Stark, could you... Or I can go this way.
Let's go that way for the moment.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated 4/16/15 for House Bill 2198.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated 4/16/15 to House Bill 2198. Is there any discussion? All right. Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2198 as amended without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2198 as amended without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Miller.
I have great concerns that we don't have the targets defined for this program, and mm-hmm. if we're going to be spending $100 million or potentially even more, I think it's hard to really hold people accountable based on just criteria and not targets. Now, targets don't have to be strict formulas, but they need to be at least something that we know what people are shooting for. Mm-hmm. So I still have uncomfortable supporting this till I see that kind of data and objectives defined more clearly.
I think the reason for not putting the due pass at this point is that it's still early in the process. We haven't really had a chance to develop it further. Don't want to ask you for a vote on the floor without having had more of that, which is why it's going on to the next stage. So, understandable. Any other discussion? Okay. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Rep. Miller?
No.
Rep. Evan?
Yes.
Rep. Agus?
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
No.
Rep. Harris?
Yes.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
No.
Vice Chair
Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Kingard?
Aye. The motion passes. Close the work session on 2198. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3535. Robin, can we please have a summary? And Representative Peluso and Representative Stark, would you like to stay up here or go down there?
Well, I think we'll go down there.
Okay,
I'll
good.
Go down there.
All right.
I would like to start here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3535 modifies temporary assistance for needy families program to promote employment and financial stability for families at risk of qualifying for or who qualify or who qualify for temporary assistance for needy families or who become ineligible for a temporary assistance for needy families due to employment. There is a -1 amendment. Make significant statutory changes to temporary assistance for needy families program, including but not limited to redefining caretaker, addressing post-TANF benefits, eliminating deprivation requirement, expanding community contracts, aligning time clock, investing in TANF staffing program, and modifying language for clarity.
Representatives.
Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer and fellow stellar members of the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. For the record, my name is Carla Peluso, and I am the representative from House District 50, the City of Gresham, and parts of Southeast Portland. I am here today to speak on an issue that you've heard me discuss before, temporary assistance for needy families, commonly called TANF, which provides cash assistance and case management to low-income families in Oregon. Today, I'm asking for your support of House Bill 3535, which proposes a reinvestment of $30 million in caseload savings to improve outcomes for children and families in the TANF program. The bill does not require new funding. Luckily, a steady decline in the number of families participating in the TANF program is generating the caseload cost reductions that fund this bill. Colleagues, this is a unique opportunity that we cannot let pass by. To provide some background to how we got here, you may recall that in February, we heard about two different bills related to changing and improving the TANF programs. At the direction of Chair Kenny Guyer, I joined my fellow co-vice chair, Representative Stark, to form a work group, and with input from the Department of Human Services and TANF advocates, we brought forward a plan as a reinvestment proposal for TANF. Ultimately, it became necessary to draft a new bill in order to fit in all the pieces that the work group agreed to move forward, which is why we are here today with House Bill 3535. DHS designed many specific investments after they identified that public assistant caseloads were on the decline and that this decline could allow for funds that would allow the state to improve the quality of the programs and delivery of services to families in the TANF program. Oregon is recovering from a recession. It's not out of it. Economic recovery is happening in an uneven way across the state, meaning that there are many families still struggling. For example, in Gresham, the local family shelter has been at capacity for months. These families know well the need that still exists and the importance of these TANF investments. Many families who use TANF struggle with low wages, the lack of available career advancement, or barriers due to low literacy, criminal history, mental health issues, or lack of work experience. The reinvestment proposals contained in House Bill 3535 work with all of that in mind and honor TANF's dual purpose of protecting children and helping parents join the workforce. This bill is made up of both investments and policy changes. The investments work to reduce the impact of the benefits cliff when TANF participants become employed, simplify eligibility requirements and expand services to increase family stability, build program capacity to provide the customized strength-based case management approach that TANF participants need to achieve and maintain family stability and employment. The policy changes work to enable the implementation of the reinvestment proposals, refocus the program direction, increase the program's flexibility to target local needs and opportunities, address outdated statute language, and extend the current suspension of House Bill 2469, which was put in place when the recession hit to ensure families could continue to receive cash assistance during this particularly tough economic time. Colleagues, this is an important bill. There are many dedicated people who put a great deal of time and effort to bring this great product forward. I especially want to thank Chair Kenny Guyer for her leadership and support. And I want to thank DHS and the staff from DHS and the advocates, the TANF advocates, and just about everybody in this room. An extra shout out goes to Robin Johnson, our committee administrator, who wrangled a large group of people together to form our work group, and it is greatly appreciated. All worked collectively with my office to accomplish all of the necessary details up to the last minute. Collectively, we refused to quit. This bill will have subsequent referrals today to ensure that the amendments captured all that we aim to accomplish and all the details are accurate. I urge your support in moving this bill with the Dash One Amendment forward. Thank you for your time and consideration. I count on your compassionate support for those Oregonians with the greatest needs. It is now my pleasure to pass the microphone to my co-chair and additional co-sponsor of this TANF bill, Representative Stark.
Well, thank you. That was impressive. So, for the record, my name is Dwayne Stark, State Representative, House District 4, Southern Oregon. A beautiful area. If you haven't been there, you need to head down and visit me down there. So, as Representative Peluso stated, this work group kind of developed because there was a tension between two different TANF-related proposals. Now, this isn't whether or not we do TANF at all. This is about if we have the opportunity to reinvest some funds from caseload savings, what can we do with those funds? And these two bills, one of them was a response to the SOS audit in 2013, which really made TANF look pretty bad. I'll come back to that in just a minute. And Representative Peluso's bill, and a number of advocates who had worked with her on that, dealt with a very fundamental problem in the way that TANF is currently structured. In that early 90s, the poverty levels or the amount of TANF and the eligibility poverty levels was set so low, and it was written at a set dollar amount. as opposed to a percentage of federal poverty level. And so that has changed, obviously, as 20 years goes by and so forth, and all of a sudden we discover that what back in those days was 66% of federal poverty level, that's the people we were planning on helping, is now 37%. So a great problem in the fundamental way that we qualify people for TANF. So this group came together trying to understand that there are limited funds available, and what do we do with limited funds? No yawning while I'm talking. Come on. That's totally against the rules. So I have coffee over here if you need some. Anyway, I was just making sure you guys are all awake. So out of this group, there's a couple things that I'm actually really excited about. One is when we criticize an agency or a program, and if we say this program is valid to have, but then we criticize it, I feel like we have to give that agency the opportunity to respond. And so DHS and a number of different advocates had worked really hard to put together a response to with all that the 2003 SOS audit said, all the different problems where it talked about benefits cliffs, where it talked about eligibility, where it talked about all the different challenges that it was having. People figured out how we can respond to that and respond to it within the amount of funds that we were expecting originally TANF to cost. Now, we've discovered it's going to cost less than expected as far as caseloads, and so we're trying to take that money and put it into this. So we give them an opportunity to fix what was broken. And then at the same time, we wanted to make sure that the advocates and all those who were trying to deal with this fundamental eligibility problem were heard. And so hence the preamble on the bill 3535. Because as Representative Peluso said, we understand we have limited resources. And so if you have limited resources, you have to figure out what are you going to do. And we feel like right now it's very important that we make TANF productive and make it succeed. And so what we did is we wanted to keep that conversation open, though, as far as future TANF savings. If we make TANF more efficient, if we move people off of the program and into the workforce faster, more efficiently, what can we do with those savings to help more people? And so we designed some language right away to begin dealing with that. The preamble is in the spirit of, in the long term, as we get better at TANF, to be able to help more people more effectively. Okay, which I love the concept there. And then the other thing that we've proposed in this is dealing with the benefits cliff. Right now, if you make $500 a month and qualify for TANF, your benefits amount is $256. And as soon as you make $600 a month, your benefit amount goes to zero. And so we've really set up a system where people don't have incentive to make more because they lose a third of their income at that point. And so this reinvestment proposal deals with that and gives the opportunity to give a more appropriate phase off rather than this harsh cliff. And therefore, people are incentivized to transition better, continue making more money, and that we let them down softer. The bill does a lot more than that, but those are a few of the things I wanted to highlight. Another thing I'm excited about it that Rep. Peluso also mentioned is so often people have the opportunity or caseworkers can see someone who is destined for TANF, in a sense, but they're not quite there. And that might be that their car has broken down and they have no transportation to work. And or they have their one payment away. They're back on their power bill and they're one payment away from all of a sudden losing their job or losing their home. And so this reinvestment proposal gives some flexibility so caseworkers can respond to those needs, to individuals, emergency type needs, where those individuals are right on the brink of coming on to the TANF payrolls, and try to keep them off of that by bridging that gap and helping people along with emergency assistance. So I'm excited about dealing with the benefits cliff, keeping the conversation open for future investment savings and helping more people. I'm excited about emergency help. A lot of good things going on, and we can let the big brains tell you any other ins and outs that you might want to know about. And again, thank you to Rep. Peluso for all of her hard work and all the advocates. I could go on and name them all, but that's like the entire room behind us. So thank you.
Thank you very much. If there are no questions for you all, we've got three people signed up. Thank you so much for all your incredibly hard work.
Thanks.
On this. Patty Whitney Wise, David Underreiner, and Janet Bauer, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the Director for Partners for Hunger Free Oregon and staff to the Oregon Hunger Task Force. I'm representing the TANF Alliance today, and we've been a strong and supportive partner at the table with DHS and more recently in the TANF work group. And we are really happy to see the direction that this has gone in to really strengthen the things that stabilize families and help them move forward. And for us, the important part is really providing that pathway for families out of poverty so that they can provide for their own families. This proposal begins to move us in that direction. House Bill 3535 embodies much of what we worked on together, recognizing that it's a down payment, that it restores about $30 million of the $80 million cut during the recession to TANF. So I just want to reemphasize that we're doing a partial restoration of the funds that were eliminated during the recession we just went through. And they're being targeted in a much more strategic way. We've learned some things. We've heard from client focus groups what their needs are. And these investments really are targeted in that way. So we are supportive of sending House Bill 3535 to the House Rules Committee so we can make sure the amendments fully address the things that we agreed on in the work group. We're all looking at it very carefully. The amendments just came out late Friday. So this does make sense to us. And we also look forward to a continued work group conversation after the session to further improve TANF. I think the group was very enthusiastic about having that bigger picture discussion on how over time, as Representative Stark talked about, we can make the investments be really smart in how we serve families and then reinvest those savings right back in to serve even more families, since we make them be almost homeless before they can get any services at this point. And eventually it would be great to allow families onto the program a little earlier so they can get through and off faster. I might say that probably the thing we're most excited about is the benefit cliff taking care of that benefit cliff at the back end so that people can slope off and be in a much more stable place before they lose benefits altogether. And I'd just like to, on behalf of the TANF Alliance, thank Representatives Peluso and Stark for their great leadership in the work group, for really putting the TANF families at the forefront of our discussions, and also to Robin Johnson, who had to hold us to the task, which was definitely a challenge sometimes since we were a very impassioned group. So thank you very much. We strongly support the passage of House Bill 3535.
Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Dave Undreiner. I am the CEO for Providence Health and Services here in Oregon and also chair of the Poverty Reduction Task Force, part of the Oregon Business Council. I'm pleased to be talking about TANF redesign at this point in time. The Oregon Business Council's Poverty Task Force has been charged with identifying actions that would support the business community's goal of reducing poverty to a rate of below 10% by 2020. A poverty reduction of that magnitude requires a range of initiatives that stretch across education, behavioral health, food stability, housing, workforce development, job creation, and safety net reform. The redesign of the TANF program is high on the task force priority list. TANF provides parents the tools to be job ready and support stable learning environments for children. Very important. Oregon TANF's program was more responsive to the recent economic downturn than almost all other states' programs. Cash assistance caseloads rose, as we heard, appropriately during the recent periods of high unemployment. Now, as the economy recovers, forecasts suggest that these caseloads will decline, creating an opportunity. Associated fiscal savings provide an opportunity to correct some of the program's design flaws. As I mentioned, TANF is an important part of the safety net, but has eroded significantly over the last 20 years. Of particular concern is the cliff, which we've heard about at the back end, resulting in families losing benefits when working only 16 hours a week. Also, many families who were stalled during the recession are approaching their lifetime limits, so another issue. TANF provides parents the tools to be job ready. TANF parents all have children, and setting those families up for success helps to maximize the K-12 investment and increase the likelihood of a job-ready next generation. The task force strongly supports a $20 million, a $30 million yeah. reinvestment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry. Not negotiating at all here.
Is that 20 plus 30?
Hey, now we're talking.
Thank you very much. As a down payment on making the program work and making work pay. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Janet Bauer. I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. Our organization is a part of the TANF Alliance and has participated in the work group around and reinvesting in the program. We are supportive of the reinvestment efforts and feel that the provisions in the Dash 1 do move Oregon forward to addressing structural issues that have been in the TANF program have been mentioned by others. We look forward to implementing those and additional ideas that came out of the work group, including the program being able to, with additional investments, serve more families who are in poverty. We appreciate the good work of our partners, including those at the Department of Human Services, who have worked with us in good faith in sharing conceptual drafts of their ideas. And we appreciate the work in the work group, especially the leadership of the chairs of the work group. We've reviewed the Dash 1 amendments and do urge your approval to rules. We look forward to refining the bill in rules. And thank you very much. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you. We've got one more person, Xochitl Esparza from DHS.
Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Xochitl Esparza, TANF Program Manager at the Oregon Department of Human Services. I think that most of my remarks were already covered by all of you so eloquently. So I just want to add that this bill has been the result of nearly a year of planning work that involved close collaboration with advocates, both at the state and the national levels, experts on poverty and TANF, partners, DHS staff, clients, and most recently the thoughtful engagement of Representative Peluso and Representative Stark, and we want to thank all of those involved in this process. The planning teams took into consideration both recommendations from the 2014 Secretary of State's performance audit, as well as the current economy and the employment trends. And we are at DHS. We believe the conversations that have taken place over the past year about outcomes that really get people stable, ready to work, and able to leave the program have been very valuable. And with the thoughtful strategies, investment, and collaboration reflected in this bill, we look forward to doing more to move the people we serve from poverty into economic stability and self-reliance in the next biennium. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions? All right. That's great.
Madam Chair, if I could make a comment, though.
Please go ahead.
Again, I just want to say thank you so much. I was approached by Patty Whitney Weiss, and I can't even remember where it was now. I just remember it was a sunny day, but and Aaron Kelly Seal, and I was schooled on TANF. I thought I had a pretty good knowledge of it, but with the help of a variety of staff members, like I say, most of which are in this room, for this freshman legislator, this is a huge, huge day. Sticking to it, getting the right people at the table, being respectful and yet challenging, so that we did this right. I am just honored and thrilled to be sitting up here today. And I know we still have some hurdles potentially to get over, but we are going to do the best for the citizens in our state that need this more now than ever. So thank you all so much.
But now I get to make a statement.
You certainly may.
All right. So this is my first work group, and I discovered the last day of the work group out of the 16 or so people in there, I was the only Republican in the room. So all y'all Republicans, step up and join the work.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 3535 and open the work session on 3535. Vice Chair Peluso, may I have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 417 of 15 for House Bill 3535.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 417-15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move House Bill 3535 as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3535 as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there a discussion? I will just mention that the reason we're putting it onto rules is because the last set of amendments, which is a really big, basically a gut and stuff, has been worked in committee. But given that it came out on Friday, it is fair to allow people to have a chance to absorb it, not only the people that were in the task force, but now that it's gone electronic, to give them a chance to see it before we actually bring it to the floor and hold you to a vote. That is the intention. However, there is enormous support and gratitude for the amount of time and effort. So sending it on to another committee is in no means, you know, a hesitation on the good work that's been done. It's just a good process issue. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Rep. Ewing?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallegos?
Aye.
Rep. Hayden?
Aye.
Rep. Parrish?
Excuse.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Peluso?
Aye.
Chair
Kagan? Aye. The motion passes. Close the public hearing on 3535. Open a work session on House Bill 2201. Robin, can you please summarize the bill?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2201 establishes task force on gambling, outlines membership and responsibilities, requires report to Legislative Assembly on or before March 1st, 2016, sunsets task force at the start of the 2017 legislative session, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a Dash 1 amendment that replaces the bill, establishing gaming council, outlines membership, directs Oregon Health Authority to staff council, outlines duties to council, directs council to provide a report on the costs and benefits of gaming activities in Oregon by March 1st, 2016, and subsequently every 4 years, declares emergency effective on passage. A fiscal statement has been issued, and there is no revenue impact, and members on the dais should have a copy of that in front of them. Otherwise, it is available on OLA.
The fiscal statement is $153,900 for the next biennium. And I want to remind the committee that the role of task forces are so that we as a policy committee can say we expect there to be a number of task forces. The Ways and Means are going to figure out if they get flooded with a lot of different task forces, how many each agency can responsibly handle. But it's always assumed that there's certain issues that rise to the top that really need a careful look. And so our job as a policy committee is not necessarily to limit the number. I mean, we want to obviously look at that, but our job is mainly to say, is this an issue that warrants a group of stakeholders in coordination with the agency to look at the issues at hand? And so we bring this forward in that regard. Are there any, we've had a motion for the, we had a motion? No. Okay, so I'll open discussion after motion. Representative Stark, would you like to read the?
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/9/15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/9/15. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection to the amendment? Not. The amendment is adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 2201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Rep Mueller?
Yes.
Rep Evans?
Yes.
Rep
Ennegas? Yes.
Rep Hayden?
Yes.
Rep Parrish?
Excused.
Rep Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sarge?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kaluza?
Aye.
Chair Kinnegar?
Aye. The motion passes. Close a work session on 2201. Open a work session on House Bill 2959. Robin, can you please summarize the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2959 directs Housing and Community Services disperse funds from specified housing accounts to be dedicated to benefit the county from which fees were collected, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash 3 amendment. Directs Housing and Community Services consider county of origin when disbursing funds collected from county fees. Directs Housing and Community Services to return to county from which return funds to county from which they were collected if unused or committed in 2 years.
So let's have a motion on this and then I'll open discussion. I'll try to be a little better on process here. Let me see. Representative Peluso.
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendment stated 4/16 of 2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash 3 amendment stated 4/16/15. Is there any discussion? Representative Bueller, would you like to present the amendment?
The amendment does two things in modifying our original concept, so it has a little bit broader implications. The first thing the amendment does is that it encourages allocation of the $27 million that's previously been unallocated from the document recording fee that the agency has right now. And if it's not used for affordable housing, distributed statewide in the next 2 years, and it's put back to the county of origin. So that's one. And the second is to actually encourage some geographic equity as a target or as a criteria in distributing the document recording fee.
And so, as I understand it, also it's to take, I think the language is take geography into consideration along with the need, which can be based on income, it can be based on vacancy rates, shovel readiness being the project being ready, but it also means how you can package it with the other kinds of funds that are available so that you can actually get going on something, and geographic consideration of where the funds came from should be a part of the discussion.
Right.
Okay, any other discussion or questions? We have Margaret Van Vliet here who can answer questions if there are any. Okay, then are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Kinnegar, I move House Bill 2959 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2959 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Rep Mueller?
Yes.
Rep Evans?
Yes.
Rep Gallego?
Yes.
Rep Hayden?
Yes.
Rep Parrish?
Aye.
Rep Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Yes.
Chair Kinnegar?
Yes. Motion carries. The motion carries. Okay.
Close the work session.
Yes, would you like to do that right now?
Did you want to close the work session?
Close the work session on 2959.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
I move we suspend the rules so that Representative Parrish can vote on the two prior bills.
Okay. Representative Peluso moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of Representative Parrish voting on two bills. Which bills are those?
Madam Chair, my apologies. I have House Bill 2201. I would check with the clerk. 3535
and 3535. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any objections? No. Suspension is granted. Representative Parrish, how do you vote on House Bill 3535?
Aye.
Okay. Representative Parrish, how do you vote on House Bill 2201?
Aye.
Thank you for that. I will now open a work session on House Bill 3143. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3143 directs Department of Consumer and Business Services to develop model sign, including resources for victims of human trafficking, requires making sign available on departmental websites, directs Department of Consumer and Business Services in cooperation with Department of Human Services to create sticker consistent with sign, becomes operative 60 days after passage, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is a -1 amendment that allows nonprofit organizations to distribute certain branded and prescribed materials to Oregon Liquor Control Commission and outlets. It directs OLCC to include materials in outlet licensing renewal packets, create sunset date on January 2nd, 2018, declares emergency effective on passage. So there is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay.
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move to adopt the -1 amendment stated for 3/24/15.
Okay. Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the -1 amendment stated 3/24/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move House Bill 3143 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 3143 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? As you may recall, is Representative Witsit's bill. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Rip Ewing?
Yes.
Rip Emmon?
Yep.
Rip Bang?
Yes.
Rip Hayden?
Yes.
Rip Parrish?
Aye.
Rip Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Paluso?
Aye.
Chair Kinney-Geyer?
Aye. Motion. The motion passes, and I will ask Representative Witsit to be the carrier. Okay, close the work session on 3143. Open a work session on House Bill 3187. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3187 increases terms of service to for Commission on the Blind to 4 years, defines full term of service, sets and clarifies terms of limit for commission, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a -1 amendment that modifies language for clarity, and the paperwork has been issued. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
And Robin, I understand that the -1, the main gist of it is to take away the emergency clause.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's see.
Yep. Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move to adopt the -3 amendment stated 4/13/15.
Is it the -3?
Yeah, I know the -1.
My apologies, Madam Chair, Representative Paluso, it is the -1.
Okay. Madam Chair, I changed my mind. Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move to adopt the -1 amendment stated 4/13/15.
Vice Chair Paluso moves to adopt the -1 amendment stated 4/13/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move House Bill 3187 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Paluso moves House Bill 3187 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I will just say some issues have arisen about the Commission on the Blind. This bill basically is a good governance bill. It brings the commission governance in alignment with how other commissions operate by moving terms from 2 years to 4 years. That gives the opportunity for terms to be staggered. Any other questions about how the commission is working, what kind of training may be needed, what kind of additional teeth in terms of accountability can be discussed on the Senate side. This bill does not go further than just addressing board terms at this point, and also defining that if you've served at least 2 years, that counts as a full term in terms of term limits. Any other discussion, questions?
On the amendment?
Nope, on the bill itself. So we passed the amendment, and so now on the bill.
So, yes. I've heard from both sides of this issue. It sounds like there's still quite a bit of concern. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, I'm going to be a no today. I'd like to take those concerns, and hopefully on the Senate side, the proponents and the opponents will actually kind of come together and go, what is our model moving forward? How do we best serve our own constituency base? How do we focus on the things I think that are really important? Like, we've heard a lot of testimony in other bills about the challenges about employment, disability services. We know that there's still problems with what happened with the School for the Blind, but I feel like there's an opportunity for those folks to come together and really address those on the Senate side. So until something comes back where I feel like there's a little more consensus, I'm just going to be a no for that purpose, but I want to encourage the people who are on either side of it to come together and say, how do we really address some of the concerns that I think are very real, that particularly people who don't want to see the terms extended, the issues that they have and the challenges they have. So,
Representative Gallegos.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Yeah, for the same reason, I'm going to be a yes on this, mm-hmm. mainly because, again, so that on the Senate side, they'll be able to really look at this as a flag it so that we can get some more conversation so that, we can look at what the board looks like and what the commission's doing and so on. So, thank you.
Yes, I would echo that. I would say I've heard some concerns, too, that rose actually after the public hearing. There was not another opportunity to do a public hearing, but in terms of this being a vehicle, because the Senate bill that called for six-year terms died, this gives an opportunity for Senator Gelser's committee to look into this more. Some of the issues are may not all get solved legislatively or with a bill that mainly deals with board terms at this point, but it gives the opportunity for that to happen, and at the very least, it gives the opportunity for the discussion to continue on the other side. Any other discussion on this bill?
I might make a clarification. So the amendment, just to be very clear, does not eliminate the emergency clause.
Oh, it doesn't?
It doesn't. What it does, actually, is it sort of condenses the bill because of some other issues. It condenses the bill to one page, which is why the line on page 2 is deleted. So I just want to be clear that there still is an emergency clause on this,
okay.
this bill.
Thank you for the correction. I thought there had been one, but that can be dealt with on the Senate side.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. Clerk, please call the roll.
Rev. Bueller?
No.
Rev. Evans?
Yes.
Rev. Gallegos?
Yes.
Rev. Hannon?
Yes.
Rev. Parrish?
No.
Aye.
Vice
Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caluso?
Aye. Aye. Motion passes. Close the work session on 3143.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, we will stand at ease. All right, we're coming back to order. And I'm going to reopen the work session on 3187 for the purpose of assigning a carrier. And I will assign Representative Comp, who introduced the bill. Close the work session on 3187. Open a work session on 3292. Robin, can you please summarize the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3292 directs Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules identifying activities landlords may contractually delegate to renters of tourist facilities, relieves landlords of liability for tenant failure to meet terms of contractual agreement. There is a -1 amendment that modifies language for clarity. We do have the paperwork on both of these, on this bill, rather, and there's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Representative Stark, I think we are.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated 4/3/15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated 4/3/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3292 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 3292 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Chair Bevin?
Yes.
Chair Gallagher?
Yep.
Chair
Yes.
Chair
Yes.
Chair
Taylor? Aye.
Chair
Yes.
Vice Chair
Aye.
Chair
Klingar? Aye. The motion passes, and I will assign Representative Springer to carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3292. Okay. I will now open a work session on 3323. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3323 allows Type B area agency to bring civil suit for physical or financial abuse of elders or persons with disability in prescribed geographic area. Declares emergency, effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that allows attorney for Type B area agencies to take action in cases of failure to reply to investigative demand. We do have the paperwork on this as well, and there is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. Representative Peluso.
Chair Kenigar, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated 3/26 of 2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 3/26/15. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenigar, I move House Bill 3323 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3323 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Parrish.
So I don't dispute the goal of this bill. I think where I'm struggling with this is that it doesn't really talk about coming back and sharing feedback about how this is working or how this can be implemented somewhere else. And it really just feels like a Portland-specific carve-out, which I struggle with. It's a little different than like saying, hey, we're going to pilot something and bring it back to everybody in the legislature. So I'm going to be a no right now. I need to spend a little more time thinking about this, and we'll certainly reserve my right to change on the floor, but I just feel like I need to get my hands around this one a little more because I don't like to see us do legislative carve-outs for one city.
So I appreciate that. I remember asking the question at the time, why just Multnomah?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a lot of counties were interested in this but didn't have the money for their DAs to be able to prosecute, and they were worried that if the ability was there, then people, their residents would want to use it and the counties would be strapped. So that's my understanding. We can invite Chris Fick up if there's any questions, if you think that that might change your vote, if you're thinking that you're pretty sure how you're going to vote and you would like to use his time between now and when we have the vote on the floor, then we won't bring him up. But it's your, what's your preference? And would anyone like to have any kind of clarification before they vote?
I think we're okay. I mean, like I said, I'm just right now I'm going to hang tight on a...
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Chair Bevin?
Yes.
Chair Gallagher?
Yes.
Chair Payman?
Yes.
Chair
Parrish? No.
Chair Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnegar? Aye. The motion passes. Representative Peluso, could you please carry the bill?
With honor.
Okay, close the work session on 3323. Open a work session on 3391. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3391, if you'll recall, we heard this on April 8th. It directs the Attorney General to file suit in Circuit Court on behalf of employees of the Department of Human Services in certain internally substantiated cases, directs Department of Human Services to convene and staff the Task Force on Safety for Child Welfare Employees, outlines membership, objectives, and process, compels written report and presentation to legislature by September 15th, 2016 declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash two amendment that adds director's permission to requirements for attorney general to file suit in circuit court on behalf of employees of Department of Human Services in certain internally substantiated cases. The paperwork has been returned. There is a fiscal statement that has been issued. There is no revenue impact.
Representative Stark, can I have a motion?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 3/25 of 15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the dash two amendments dated 3/25/15. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Representative Evans, do you want to address the amendments or would you like to wait and just talk about the overall bill? Okay. Any discussion on amendments? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3391 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Judiciary by prior reference.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 3391 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Judiciary by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Just want to say thanks for consideration of the bill. I'd like to take credit for it, but it actually was an idea brought forward by the folks that are doing the work, and this hopefully will keep them safer.
Thank you for your work with them on that. Representative Stark.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Why is it going to judiciary?
I think anything time it requires Attorney General to be doing something, I'm assuming it's got to have a look over in the judiciary.
Okay. We're hoping it's a short stay.
Okay.
Short sentence.
Any other discussion?
No pun intended.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Evans, for working on this. And Clerk, please call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Rep.
Aye.
Rep. Hayden?
Aye.
Rep. Harris?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Pelosi?
Aye. Chair
Kniegar? Aye. The motion passes. Representative Evans, would you please carry the bill?
Yes.
Well, I guess we have to wait till after judiciary, but we'll put that request into them.
Yes.
Okay, close the work session on 3391. Open a work session on House Bill 3420. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3420 directs Housing and Community Services to establish a Housing First pilot project, a Housing First pilot program in specific geographic areas, directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to obtain study on cost of homelessness, establishes Housing First pilot project fund, and allows for funding sources outside the general fund, appropriates unspecified funding for pilot project, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash three amendment that replaces the bill, defines homelessness, defines service system of care, directs Housing and Community Services to establish a Housing First pilot program in specified geographic areas, directs OHCS to obtain study on cost of homelessness, establishes Housing First pilot project fund and allows for funding sources outside the general fund, appropriates $2 million from general fund for pilot project, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a fiscal light statement and no revenue impact, and the light was requested because it's going, the request is that it be moved to the Committee on Rules for further amendment there.
Okay, where's the Nafuso?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the dash three amendments dated 4/14/2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash three amendments dated 4/14/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3420 as amended without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules and then be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3420 as amended without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules and then be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Chair, yeah, I mean, I think this is one that Representative Bueller and I were very interested in seeing their evaluation design, their research design. Mm-hmm. But it's a great bill. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Clerk, please call the roll.
Rep. Bueller?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallego?
Yep.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Harris?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Pelosi?
Aye.
Chair Kniegar?
Aye. Motion passes. Close a work session on 3420. Open a work session on 3494. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Sure.
So much page flipping. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3494 prohibits landlords from requiring tenants to declaw or devocalize animals as a condition of application for residency. There is a dash one amendment that replaces the bill prohibiting devocalization or declawing of cats and dogs except under prescribed circumstances. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. Representative Peluso, would you like to read?
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move to adopt the dash one amendment stated 4-8 of 2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash one amendment stated 4-8-15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move House Bill 3494 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3494 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Chair. This is a weird one for me because I agree with banning this type of practice. I do feel like it is somewhat unfairly calling out one specific group of the population, being the landlords.
So this actually took that away. So the amendment was a gut and stuff.
Okay, so
it treats that's why we took your concern very seriously.
Okay, so who's being banned from this?
So everyone. So
this is
basically
everyone. This is across the board now.
It's across the board, and we would be the fourth state to do it in terms of the devocalization, I believe. And first state to do it in terms of the decline, and this is a recommendation of the National Veterinary Association.
Oh.
There are all kinds of provisions in it if there's medically necessary.
How about if a judge orders it, like the other day was in the paper?
I didn't see the paper. There are all kinds of exceptions allowed, but it treats everyone across the board the same.
Well, thank you.
It doesn't put it on the landlords and the renters.
You have resolved my concern.
That was I think many people on this committee had that concern. And so, okay, any other questions on it? Okay, seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Rep. Bueller?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallegos?
Woof.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Parrish?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Yes. Take care.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Kenny-Geyer?
Aye. The motion passes. I will assign Representative Barton as the carrier. Representative Bueller, you're on the spill too. Would you like to be co-carrier?
No.
Okay. All right. Close the work session on 3494. And we'll stand at ease for a moment. Call the committee back into order and open a work session on House Bill 3524. Robin, can we have a summary of the bill?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3524 directs state agencies to notify nonprofit organizations of lands available for purchase for the purpose of affordable housing development. There is a dash two amendment pending, which modifies language for clarity, removes erroneous reference to the Department of Transportation. There is a fiscal statement that is issued and no revenue impact for this bill.
Okay, may I have a motion, Representative Peluso?
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move to adopt the dash two amendment stated 4-14 of 15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash two amendment stated 4-14-15. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Representative Parrish, you can either comment now or at the bill, but later.
No comment.
We move the whole bill. Okay. Are there any objections to the amendments? Seeing none, amendments are adopted.
It is going to committee on rules. It's just there's a mistake on the bottom.
We're going to stand at ease.
That's probably a good idea.
Okay. call the House Committee on Human Services and Housing back to order. And we will reopen the work session on 3524. I believe that we've already done the amendment.
Right here.
And we are now on the motion.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3524 as amended.
Wait, I'm sorry. You didn't hear the...
Okay. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3524 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Is that enough? Yeah, I think so. Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3524 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there anything we left out? Amended to the floor with the two pass recommendations. No, that's the other one. Okay. Is there any discussion? And Representative Parrish, would you like to say anything about the bill?
There's comment here.
Go ahead.
I thought you were going right to the.
There we go. Now that we know Mr. Parrish. This is a good step bill. There's a lot here. And I heard some discussion early, like when we heard the bill. That actually sort of piqued my interest after we left. One of the comments came up, Representative Buehler, I think, brought up, you know, are we getting the best possible use of the money of the land? Or I don't remember how you phrased it. And, you know, and could you, do you have to develop the whole thing? And for me, there's sort of a, there is an interesting possibility. And I'm thinking about, like, the Lake Oswego Armory, for example, which got sold and is now a school. It's a really prime piece of property. It was a very large piece of property. And I think about a piece of property like that where you could offer that as a first right of refusal and theoretically split it, sell half of it or use half of it for the affordable housing, sell the other half and use that as a way to finance the affordable housing. So I'm like personally sort of open to that. There's some interesting possibilities around, you know, those, a large parcel lot that may not fully get developed but could have some other use and be a mechanism for one of these nonprofit or tribal folks to actually say, hey, we want to do this, and maybe we can actually use the land to help be the finance mechanism to keep these affordable and out of debt is interesting to me as a possibility. The bill doesn't say you can or can't do that, but I think that's an interesting creative way to potentially finance an affordable housing project, particularly in an urban growth area where the land's really expensive. So I do think, and I'm willing to, you know, if there is concern about is this the best possible value for the agency, to make sure we get that on record, that there's a fiduciary responsibility of the taxpayer to make sure that if we sell that land, that we are getting our highest maximum value out of the land. And if we need to address that subsequently in another amendment, I'm happy to do that on the Senate side. But I think that, you know, that does open up some opportunities for some unique financing on a piece of land like that piece in parcel in Lake Oswego where we turned the armory into a school, and it actually had a lot of value, probably more value for both the affordable housing side and other housing that could have happened there instead of just keeping it, you know, an armory turned school. So
thank you, Representative Hayden.
When we heard the bill, I voiced a couple of concerns. One is I've bought and sold a fair amount of property. Anytime that you put a first right of refusal on it, it immediately decreases the value of the property. I suppose that could be argued. And then I just didn't feel like this was fleshed out enough to make me comfortable with it. I think dividing the parcel where that could be used as a good thing to fund the project, it could also be used if they could divide that parcel off and build whatever they want, because of that first right of refusal, they could really generate some profits there. So I think for me, it just needs a little more work. So I'll be a no vote on it.
I'm going to be a no vote also for similar reasons. I think this is not thought out well enough, and I worry about the decreased value that being used for other uses just by essentially flipping the property. Another reason too, but I can't remember it.
Yes, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. I was ready to move it on to rules so that some of these concerns could be addressed. I think it's a
very good start towards something. But I'm not quite ready to recommend it go straight to the floor, as is, without being able to address some of these things. So at this point, I'll be a no.
I think it can go to the Senate.
Okay. Any further discussion? There is the other half of the building, so some of it can continue to be worked out. We've sent a few things on to rules, but I'm going to follow the prerogative of the person who's been working on it here and let her take your concerns on to the Senate. Clerk, please call the roll.
Kirk Buehler?
No.
Kirk
yes.
Kirk Gallegos?
Yes.
Kirk Hayden?
No.
Kirk Parrish?
Yes.
Kirk Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sark?
No.
Vice Chair Pelosa?
Aye.
Chair
Hagar? Aye. Motion passes, and I will ask Representative Parrish and Representative Reardon to carry it on the floor. And I'll close the work session on 3524. We are going to have a motion to go back to Representative Evans' bill after some questions were raised about judiciary. We're going to go back to that one.
So, where's that one?
Okay, here it is.
Okay. I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3391.
Representative Peluso moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3391. Are there any objections? If not. And in case I didn't open the work session on House Bill 3391, I now open the work session on House Bill 3391. And are there any objections to the suspension of rules? Seeing none.
I move to rescind the subsequent referral to judiciary.
Representative Peluso moves to rescind the subsequent referral on House Bill 3391 to judiciary. Any discussion on that? Basically, what we found out is that we can't move it to judiciary or it would die, because it's got a, today's its last day as well. There was a possibility that we could send it on to rules if it needed more work, but we actually don't think it needs more work. There was no objections to it, and so we're ready to move it on to the floor. If the Senate wants to have the judiciary on that side have its stamp of approval, we'll make sure that happens in time. Here.
Madam Chair, okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to move it to the floor of the DuPass Recommendation.
Okay.
It would just be this,
right.
This half.
So we're down here?
Mm-hmm.
Vice Chair, or Chair, Kenny Guyer, I move House Bill 3391 as amended to the floor with a DuPass Recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3391 as amended to the floor with a DuPass Recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Stark.
Only to say that I like this motion better than the previous motion.
Okay. All right. Seeing none, the clerk will call a roll.
Kirk Buehler?
Yes. Yes.
Kirk Gallegos?
Aye.
Kirk Hayden?
Aye.
Kirk Perrin?
Aye.
Kirk Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Pulisa? Aye.
Chair Kigar?
Aye. The motion passes. And that is our final bill. We've made it through. Oh, Representative. Oh, and. Thank you. Representative Evans, could you please carry the bill
yes.
on the floor?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I close the work session on House Bill 3391. Woo-hoo! We actually are getting out exactly at 4:45. I want to thank everyone for a great first 2 months getting through up through today, and give you all a much-needed break. No committee on Wednesday or Friday.
Yoo-hoo!
Wednesday makes up for the Friday that we had to squeeze in there. I think it was April 10th. And Friday, this is our regular take the Friday off. It also gives Robin a chance to catch up in the paperwork. So I'm hoping to see you all refreshed a week from today.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Better than Christmas.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Better than Christmas.